Welcome to the most haunted podcast. It's the 222 Paranormal Podcast, starring your host, Joshua Ridge, and Jen, his sister, who
haunted.
Is haunted. Speaking of haunted.
Oh, yeah?
So I was doing a little research on our guest today, and I wanted to find some weird things that happened in the state that he came from.
Okay.
So I found one, and I want to share it with all our listeners and my brother. So I was looking up like 10 strange things only in your state, right? So he lives in Utah. So I found this really interesting thing that happened in Utah. So there was a gentleman named Elmer L. Gray who placed a seriously strange headstone on his wife's grave. Now, what it says is Lily E. Grave, June 6, 1881 to November 14, 1958. But the strange part about it is underneath the date, it says victim of the beast 666.
Ooh.
And it says theories abound about as to why or who puts victim of the beast on a headstone of a loved one.
He did.
And there's no real link that she died from anything other than natural causes, but they thought this guy was, you know, had a little screw loose. And he was just really eclectic. So, who does that, right?
Yeah.
Like, but you never know.
You never know. I mean, he could have been
1958. Who knows?
Could have been
what year?
The way that he, you know, the way that he saw it, she could have been possessed by the devil. You know, I mean,
it's just interesting. So, another weird thing that happened in Utah.
I mean, women are crazy.
Well, yeah. Hello. Because men make us that way. It's a double-edged sword, isn't it? We could go down that rabbit hole, but we need like 50 podcasts to cover that. Right? Here's another strange thing that happened in a place called Skull Valley. In March of 1968, 6,000 sheep died mysteriously. Somebody thought maybe it was some open air test by the army with a nerve agent, but the army denied it. They said they didn't have anything to do with it, and nobody's ever come up with an explanation why 6,000 sheep died in the same little valley, Skull Valley.
I mean, if it was a government test, they wouldn't admit it anyways.
Yeah, that's true. Right.
You know, I mean, I don't want to sound like a conspiracy theorist.
Let's do it.
But, I mean, the only other explanation would be lightning strike and they all the sheep were touching each other. Not inappropriate. Oh, my God, Jen.
Nosed butt.
Jeez.
Bah.
They were very, very bad.
Yeah. But, you know, like our guest today, he's the Skinwalker Ranch is in Utah.
That's what he said in the interview, yeah. It's really cool that there's people out there like him that collect stories and are willing to share the stories that people tell him with others. I mean, there's countless times. I mean, obviously he's had a lot more, but countless times where we're just out doing things and people will see our shirt or something and they'll tell us their stories.
Yeah.
And it's...
it's hard because not everybody wants to listen.
Yeah.
These days, they're very self... You know, and preserving the stories of things that have gone on in the past is important because it kind of explains, you know, if something's happening now in a location, it may have been happening 20 years ago, 40 years ago, 50 years ago. Who's to say in 50 years from now, something's happening and nobody understands it whatsoever, right?
You know, and that's why we're in this because
we're historians.
Most people, you know, people don't realize it, but people that are in the paranormal field are historians. They're seeking out the past and keeping it for the future. Mm-hmm. You know,
I agree.
We've said it many, many times. And it's same with locations. You know, lots of times we do conventions or we visit haunted locations and we pay to get in because that preserves that location. They're used, like the Gill House is a perfect example.
Or the South Main School.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Perfect examples because, you know, these people are coming in there that are, that care about these places, they care about the history, they care about paranormal investigations, and really the only way to save these places are to open them up to groups.
Yeah.
And unfortunately, it costs money, but that's what keeps it going.
Well, you know, as the generations go on, they lose interest in old things. They want new things, right? They want the newer, the faster, the better. And you're getting that great divide of you know, people our age, hello.
Who's, back in the day.
Back in the day, in the 70s, when we were riding our big wheels, wearing our moon boots. We still had that, you know, that caring for things, because our parents and our grandparents came from a generation where you preserve things. Like, you know, our grandparents grew up in the Depression. They were young couple then. So, you know, you made do with what you had. You preserved what you had, yeah, because you just couldn't go out and buy new stuff, mm-hmm, right? Even our parents, you know, raising us in the 60s and 70s, you made do with what you had. You respected the places that your forefathers appreciated and built, you know, like there's places that, you know, the hands of our forefathers created bridges and roads and churches and roads and all that thing. So, and that's what I love about the series of books, is these stories don't just tell about a ghost. They tell about the history.
Yes.
Of you know, the area in Utah that this gentleman's
from. Yeah, we can't lose this. You know, we cannot lose the stories. And it's great that there's people like John that could put these in book form, because I know I couldn't do it. You know, I've thought about it many times of writing a book, but I can't even read, let alone write. No.
Books on tape for, yeah, Joe. Everybody just send them your
books
on tape.
It'd be a very slow read, because I read slow. No. So anyhow, let's play the interview for everybody. And I was really intrigued listening,
yeah,
to him.
Really interesting stories. So we'll catch up with you on the flip side.
All right.
And with us today on the 222 Paranormal Podcast, we have John E. Olson. Welcome to the show, John.
Hey, thank you guys so much for having me on.
Yeah, we're really honored that you come on the show and talk about your fantastic books. If everybody, I'll give you a little introduction about John. So John is an author, and he has spent, you know, 25 years of his life interviewing and documenting accounts of paranormal and strange happenings. So welcome to the show, John. How are you?
I'm doing great. I appreciate you guys having me on. It's a great opportunity to talk to you guys. I love your show.
Oh, thank you so much. Just for our listeners, let's give John an opportunity to tell us a little bit about his background, and then we'll get into talking about his books.
Plural.
Yeah, so John, tell us a little bit about where you're raised, and
basically how you got into this whole mess,
and how I got into it. Right. So, I actually grew up in northern Utah, in a small valley. It's called Cache Valley, and the home that I grew up in was over 100 years old. It was built in 1881, roughly, and by the time I was 8 years old, I kind of figured out that my house was a little different than other people's houses, that there was something going on that wasn't normal. And I have an older sister and a younger brother, and we would talk about it and talk to my parents about the goings on. And my parents were adamant that we don't talk outside of the house about the house being haunted. And they were afraid of people judging us, people thinking we were crazy. Back then, it wasn't as open, I guess, as it is now with people's paranormal experiences. And so we had all kinds of things go on. We had, you know, footsteps that would go up and down the main stairs all the time throughout the day. It could happen any time of the day, and nobody would be there. In fact, when we were really younger, around 8 years old, one of us, I'm not sure which one of us, coined the term the stair monster. And we just called it the stair monster growing up. And whenever we referred to the ghost, it was the stair monster. But it wasn't until I was older and I had friends over when I was in my teens, and actually they had experiences in my house, and then they would look at me and say, you know, what was that? What's going on? And I would have to finally say, well, you know, my house is haunted. And they thought it was really cool, and they wanted me to share my stories. So I ended up, you know, I'd be at a party or out double dating or, you know, at whatever. And they'd be like, oh, did you guys know John's house is haunted? Have him tell you a bunch of stories. So I would tell some stories that had happened to me. And after a short time, by the time I was 17 or 18, I had people coming to me and saying, oh, I had a paranormal experience I'd love to share with you, because they felt comfortable knowing that I'd also had experiences. And so I started documenting them and interviewing people and hunting down stories that I would hear. And it really just started from there.
Do you think that the activity is still going on in the house?
Oh, yeah, it is, actually.
Oh, okay.
My parents still live there.
Oh.
My parents still live in the same house. I live about 30 miles away, but I see my parents quite often. My younger brother has Williams syndrome, which is near Down syndrome, but he's high functioning, but he'll live with my parents forever. And he or my dad will call me all the time and tell me an experience they've had in the house. I myself, about a month ago, I remember I was going to pick up my son from school and I had extra time, so I was going to stop by and see my parents. And this is kind of a classic thing that the ghost likes to do. I pulled in the driveway and their car was gone. And I went into the house and I called. I'm like, hey, I'm home. And somebody from the front room called, we're in the front room. And so I walked into the front room and nobody's home. TV's off, everything's dark. And I look around the house and of course they're gone. So I sat down and was reading, waiting for them to come home. And I heard the back door open and close, and I heard my dad's voice say, we're home. And so I went into the kitchen in there, and nobody's home. The car's not there.
Wow.
And I just kind of chuckled and said, oh, you got me again.
Yeah, the trickster ghost.
So, yeah, it's a very playful ghost. It likes to play pranks and always has. It'll be interesting because it'll go a couple months with nothing, and then my parents will tell me they've had quite a few experiences going on. So.
So can I ask a question about the home? Was this a family home prior to your parents moving in there?
So the original home that was built by the railroad, back in the day when the railroad was coming through the West, that was how the government paid the railroad, was with land. And so they would build things on it or parcel it out to farms and then sell it, so the railroad would make money that way. And it was originally built by the railroad and then sold to an individual. And then it came into my family, distant relatives. And interestingly enough, the one apparition that I've seen and that several of the family members have seen is a tall, skinny figure with overalls and a wide-brimmed hat. But you can't see the facial features when I saw it. And when my grandmother, who lived only a block away, passed away, and we were going through the family albums, I came to a picture, about fell off the chair when I found it, of a tall, skinny man in overalls and a white shirt and a wide-brim hat standing in front of my house, and it was from the 20s. And then I realized that that individual ghost has to be one of my great-great uncles that owned the house at that time in the 20s and had a farm.
That's awesome, and he's still there.
And he's still there. Yep.
Now, okay, I was going to ask you if you think that they're residual or intelligent, but if they're moving things and calling out your name, that's definitely intelligent hauntings.
Yeah, I think there's actually both, because I kind of attribute the footsteps, which are both like big heavy boots and then children's shoes running up and down. I think that might be more residual, but there's definitely intelligent haunting that goes on there too.
Oh, interesting.
Yeah.
Do you know of any documented deaths in or around the house?
There wasn't any that I could find, but I know that for example, the great-great uncle that owned it, both him and his wife did pass away in that house. And they owned the home all the way until they had passed. And then same with a few other relatives there. It was abandoned for about 8 years between when my parents bought it in the 60s and then started restoring it. So it was a little rundown when they first bought it. But for the most part, it's been, you know, maintained and kept. And like I said, I know that a few people have passed away in the house. So,
Do you think when your parents started restoring that may have stirred up any of the activity?
Yeah, I think it does, because I've helped my dad do some restoration and remodeling, and usually around that time it tends to stir things up a little bit. One thing that happened that reminds me of that is, like I said, when I was younger, my parents wouldn't talk about it, but later on found out they were having experiences. And the main bathroom, at the time growing up, we only had one bathroom, but it had two entrances. One was from the main living area, and the other one was from my parents' bedroom. And I came home from school one day, and my dad is tearing out the door and putting in a wall on his side of the door on their bedroom side. And I asked him, I said, well, why are we doing that? And he's really short. He's like, we're just doing it because this is how we want it. But come to find out later that my mother had gotten just sick of waking up in the middle of the night and having a figure standing in the doorway from the bathroom watching them sleep. And they thought if they boarded that up, that would go away. And so, and it did. Apparently, whoever it was stopped opening the door because there was no door, and they couldn't see the figure anymore.
Now, is your family more open to it now, or are they like more accepting, seeing that it's so prevalent and out in the open now?
Yeah, they are. Even my dad, who was really the last one to come around, I would say, he calls me quite a bit. You know, as soon as something happens to me or to him, he'll give me a call, and they're, you know, they're proud of my books, and they, you know, give my books away to people all the time. And they keep telling me, don't say exactly where we live, which is fine with me. And it's funny because my sister, she, because of the paranormal, she turned towards having a paranormal group and some other things like that. And whenever we've tried to have a paranormal group there to catch something, we've catched very little. I think it doesn't like to perform for people, if that makes sense. And so we've caught a few things doing that, but yeah, it's interesting though.
Yeah, I would think, because, you know, being it is a family establishment, and it sounds like you have some past family members, you know, they're there, they just don't want to be bothered. Like, we're here, right, but we're not here to entertain.
Right. But they sure do like to play tricks. That's sure. That's the main thing. So,
now, have you yourself caught any evidence? Either like EVPs or anything like that?
I have, and it's been quite a while. When my older son was younger, my oldest was younger, I was videotaping him upstairs because I'd just got a new videotape or video camera, and we were showing Grandma and Grandpa, and we were upstairs filming, and he was talking. And then when I looked back at it, I caught a voice on it when he wasn't talking, and I enhanced it the best I could. And it was actually a German, it was a German accent. It was saying gehen Sie aus, which is get out of the house, basically in German. But like I said, I've never felt anything, you know, ominous or evil about it, but that was definitely, you know, very vivid on that videotape that we had.
How close to the railroad is the house?
So the railroad runs down on the other side of town, so it's not real close to the railroad. It's just part of the parcel that was given to the railroad because they were building at the time. So, and that's just what I found out through my research on the house.
Yeah, and it was just interesting because, you know, we've heard and had some cases where, you know, spirit activity runs along the railroads because of the energy running through the line. So I just thought that was interesting that, you know, you would have that kind of activity, you know, being it was property of the railroad, but it sounds more like it's just the people that were tied to the house.
Now, yeah, I think it's much more just the people that were tied to the house, and you know, they had families and raised families there, and so, yeah, of course they'd be, you know, partial to the house.
Yeah, and you know, that's a lot of people mentioned too, is if there's deaths in the house, most times back then the funeral and everything was held right in the house.
Yeah, that's correct. So, yep, they had the viewing and the wake or whatever right there in the house.
So there's always a lot of energy.
Yes, definitely. Definitely.
Well, let's talk a little bit about the books. You know, your first book, Stranger Bridgerland, I hope I'm saying that.
Bridgerland, yeah.
Bridgerland. I have an Ohio accent, so it might come out a little different, right?
Right.
You know, you said you were collecting stories and ideas. Is that what sparked you to want to write this book?
Yeah, you know, I've been collecting for years and years, and I went through a really hard time in my life. I went through a really rough divorce, and then I got remarried. And when I got remarried to this wonderful woman, her name is Annie, I had to tell her kind of what I did other than my regular job. I also interview people and I do this. And she's like, and she saw the stack of information and stories, and she's like, well, what are you going to do with it? And I said, well, my plan was someday to write a book. And she was so loving and just so, you know, helpful that she was like, well, let's do it. I'm going to help you. You're going to write your first book. And so we did right after that. You know, I wrote it and she helped me with it. And it just kind of took off from there. And then once my first book was published, Stranger Bridgerland, I had more people contact me, and I got more stories, and I still have older stories and new stories. And so it's just kind of snowballed.
Were you planning this to be like just one book or the series?
You know, at first I was just planning on one book, and then I still had a stack of stories, and I still had stories coming in, and I had such a great time writing the first book that, you know, it just felt natural to go on to the next, and I'm up to three, but honestly, I've actually already started compiling the next one.
Oh, cool.
So yeah, it's just been, I love it. So
now, once people find out, I mean, obviously a lot of people told you the stories and that, but once people find out what you do, are you just overwhelmed with stories, or people like in the supermarket come up to you and say, you know, I got this story.
Or... you know, it's, I have quite a few people come to me and they contact me and I try and make arrangements to talk to them. And I just kind of chip away at it. I like to tell people, you know, contact me, I'll make first contact, and then don't give up on me because I'm coming around to it, because there's quite a few people that I do talk to. So
could you just maybe share with our listeners a little ghost story out of the book, or maybe a little snippet of what they could anticipate when they purchase and read your book?
Yeah, you bet. So one from the valley that I live in, I interviewed this lady named Julie. And I would like to put in here that if somebody does give me their story and they want their name changed, I do that for them so that they can have a little anonymity. Some people are okay with it, some people aren't. But this woman came to me, and she used to work at a building on campus of Utah State University here, and it's called Old Main. And it was built near the turn of the century, one of the first buildings at the university. And her job was working from 4 a.m. to 8 a.m. cleaning the building. And she said that one day she'd been working for less than a week, and she got in the elevator and went to the basement and stepped out of the basement. And as she walked into the hall, there was a woman walking towards her, and the woman was very much out of place. She had an old gray dress on. Her hair was out up in a bun, but part of it was out like she's in a hurry. And she had a gray belt, and she walked past her, and the lady nodded at her and then walked on. And it was just really old fashioned clothes. And when she turned to get another look at the lady, she was gone. And she asked some of the other people, and they said, oh, that's the gray lady. She's always in a hurry. She's really kind. She'll nod at you, but then she disappears shortly after. And she's always in the basement and in a hurry. And she goes, oh, she's like, is there any other ghosts? And they said, well, on the third floor, there's the gentleman. And they said, well, she says, who's that? And they basically said, well, you'll know when you see him. And she saw him several occasions too. She saw the gray lady several occasions. And the gentleman, they call the gentleman, is on the fourth floor or on the third floor. And he'll stand at the end of the hallway facing away from you. And he's in old style clothes and a hat. And he'll stand there until you walk towards him, and then he'll hurry around the corner and disappear. No matter how fast you get to him, he'll be gone. They also have things move and sounds go on when they were up there cleaning. And she did that for about 4 or 5 years. And she said it was pretty constant, the activity in Old Main on campus.
Have you had the opportunity to go to any of these places and investigate?
Yeah, yourself? Well, whenever I get a story, I definitely try and go there if I haven't, to try and get a feel for it. I haven't done a lot of like ghost hunting investigations, so to speak. I have helped people who have called me and said, you know, I think I have a ghost, I think I have a problem, and I'll come in and talk to them and go through some different stuff and try and figure out what's going on with them, to try and help them out. Because a lot of times, especially nowadays with some of the shows that are on, people immediately jump to, I have a demon in my house.
Right.
and that's not necessarily the case. Usually it's something benign, like the water heater is too loud or something. Yeah. But when it is a ghost, I try and tell people, ghosts are just people who have passed on. It's like meeting 10 people in the street. 9 of them are going to be pretty nice. 1 out of 10 is going to be a jerk. And right. So you kind of have to deal with it the same way.
Has there been, outside of just ghostly paranormal, in your particular area, do you have any other type of activity, whether it's UFO, Bigfoot, cryptids?
That's what I was going to ask, too.
Joe's question.
In the book, are they just ghost stories? Are they UFO? Because, unfortunately, I have not had a chance to read the book, so don't get mad at me. No.
Well, you know, I actually collect stories of all paranormal genre. I have ghost stories. I have UFO stories. I have Bigfoot stories. I have cryptid stories. And then I have a section that I call Glitches in the Matrix. These are stories that I've collected from people that don't fall under the other categories. They're more like false memories or memories that have changed, I guess you could say,
yeah.
Or doppelgangers. I interviewed one person, a gentleman who was going to school at the time at USU. I do have a lot of stories from the Valley, but they go all out all over the Western United States. But this gentleman ran into basically himself on campus one day, and they stared at each other for a minute. And he said the only difference was he's a Seattle Seahawks fan, and he had a Seattle Seahawks hat on, but the guy that he was looking at had a Seattle Seahawks hat. But it was different colors. It was a red and orange instead of the green and blue, which was weird. And they tried to catch the guy, but he took off and through the buildings and disappeared. He couldn't find him again. But it was basically like looking in a mirror, he said. It was very strange. So there's all different kinds of stories in my books.
That is very interesting, because I've heard of stories about doppelgangers before, but I've never heard one that actually had a different color outfit on or something.
Yeah, that made me almost think, you know, is it a parallel universe, is it something, you know, because
I was even thinking time slip when you were mentioning that, but then again, time slip,
right?
It wouldn't be a mirror image because it'd be a different time, or
right, like it would be a different time,
different mm-hmm. parallel universe or something.
Yeah, exactly.
That's so interesting.
Do you find that there's certain areas, and I'll just say Utah in particular because you're in Utah, that mm-hmm. have more or increased paranormal activity, and why do you think those particular areas have that level of?
Yeah, I definitely do. I do think that there are different areas. What's interesting is I find most areas have their folklore and legends with them, no matter where you go. There's two in particular that come to mind, especially in Utah, is there's a mountain range called the Uinta Mountains. And if you know the Skinwalker Ranch, it butts up right against the backside of the Uintas. And that whole area where people live, there's only two people who've seen UFOs and people who haven't lived there for 2 weeks yet. That's what they're saying. Wow. And so there's a lot of activity in that area, and that has to do with UFOs, Bigfoot, ghosts, especially Native American folklore and ghosts in that area, including, you know, skinwalkers. And then what I found really interesting when I was doing all my research and interviewing people, I interviewed a bunch of people who had Bigfoot encounters in my area. And when I plotted them on the map where the people had told me they had had them, and even though they didn't know each other and didn't know their stories, you could draw like a 4-mile radius around, and they would all be within that 4-mile radius in the mountains in northern Utah. And it's near Bear Lake, near the summit, near Bear Lake up here in northern Utah. So there's definitely places that are concentrated with different stories and different experiences.
So do you find that while writing the book, did you find like cluster areas besides that, or was that just something that you noticed because of that story?
Well, because of the stories, I'd noticed that that was a cluster for UFOs. I know there's a rather large mountain that's called the Wellsville Mountains, and that seems to be a huge UFO cluster for some reason.
Oh, okay.
And then there's different places not far from where I live, actually, is one of the largest massacres of Native American massacres in U.S. history. It was the Bear River Massacre. And I've gathered a lot of stories of people seeing different apparitions and having ghost experiences up there. I actually haven't written any of those stories yet because I want to do it in a way that's going to be respectful. And I just got to feel right about it before I do it.
Yeah,
but yeah, it's interesting how there's clusters of all different kinds of things like that.
I just want to go back to the skinwalker that you brought up. What's your personal feeling of what they are?
You know,
if you believe
in Native American lore, you know, it's a medicine man who's turned to basically witchcraft, and they're able to shapeshift and all kinds of things like that. And so that's what the Skinwalker Ranch is named after. And I know there's a lot of stories of people who have run into skinwalkers, shapeshifters, and things of that nature up there. I know that that ranch in particular, which is completely closed off, you cannot get on that. There's surveillance and everything, but it's really fascinating some of the things that have gone on that ranch and the things that go on around it as well, in the towns and some of the other ranches around it. Seems to be a focal point for it. I know that in my book, I interviewed a young lady who, not far from here to the north, had an experience where she was coming down the canyon late at night. In fact, it was early in the morning. It was really late. And she came across a Native American on the side of the road, and she got really frightened and wondered what was going on. So she passed him and drove further down the canyon. And then when she came around the corner again, he was there further down the canyon, and there's no way he could have gotten in front of her.
Yeah.
And she kind of attributed that to some of the stories of the skinwalkers as well in that area. So
do you believe that they're energy, or do you think they're a physical being?
You know, when I've studied Native American lore and some of the Native American religion, it's kind of hard to understand, because in their culture with Bigfoot and Wendigos and all of these other creatures that they talk about, in their mind, it's both. It can be a physical creature, or it can be a spiritual creature, and it's kind of both to them, which is hard for us to kind of wrap our minds around.
Yeah.
And in a lot of ways, it can be a spiritual creature that has the ability to show itself in a physical form. So I think it's got something to do with that, definitely.
Have you had any Native Americans reach out to you to tell their story, or are they close to like opening up to, you know, the people outside of the tribe or reservation?
I've met a few of them. I've interviewed a few. I have yet to get one that will actually let me share the story yet, because they are very closed off. It's very, it's a very sacred thing for them. And I know that in many of the cases, they think it's bad luck just to talk about it. And so it makes it really hard. But I have, in some cases, been able to talk to them about the situation and find out more about their beliefs, especially when it comes to Bigfoot or, you know, different creatures like that.
So when you're gathering all your stories, you know, how do you determine what story you want to put in the book? Is it based on the level of evidence, or is it that it's just an interesting story? Or as a writer, what's your process for, you know, filtering through some of these ideas and stories?
You know, it has a lot to, when I interview somebody, I have to go off gut instinct of, you know, are they telling me the truth? Mm-hmm. You know, do they believe what they're saying? And that's definitely something that I take into consideration. And also, you know, like you say, how interesting is the story? How does it play out? Because that's important too. I want to make sure it's truthful and yet exciting when people read my books. And so it's kind of a process. I have a lot that of stories that keep filtering through that I keep planning on putting in the book, but then they get filtered down. And because I want to, sometimes I'm like, I write it out and I have follow-up questions. I want to try and contact that person and ask a few more questions before I can, you know, flesh the story out completely. So it's really just kind of a process of going through.
And as a, you know, I know the process because, you know, I'm a writer myself, but
right.
How long did it take you to, you know, I'll say start to finish, to pull mm-hmm. this together and, you know, from like, okay, this is my idea and I want to do this until it was published? Because, you know, I think a lot of our listeners are interested in, you know, wanting to maybe pull stories together or, you know, understand what it takes to really write a book.
Right.
A lot of blood, well, sweat, and tears, right?
Right. It really does. It's kind of amazing of the process, because I'll tell you, now that I've actually done it a couple times, three times now, and so I can explain the last one. It takes me about a year to, because I have to pull them together, decide which ones, write them out, and then, you know, go through my own rough draft and then get that to my editor. And then while she's looking through my not so rough draft, I'm going out and taking pictures that can go along with it and getting pictures to go along with it. And then she'll come back and give me notes and then I'll change. So it takes about a year from start to finish. Cause I do everything. I do my own writing and then she does the editing, but I do the pictures and I design the cover, and my daughter helped me with the last one. She wanted to help with the design, but so it just takes a year basically for me from beginning to when it comes out. I've been able to narrow it down to a year. So
I think people just in general don't understand when you're writing, you are pouring yourself into this. Like, this is blood, sweat, and tears. It's a job, right? Like, it is hard work to write a book. Mm-hmm. And you know, when people say, oh, I'm going to get your book, they don't understand that is a labor of love. Like, you put your whole soul into it. It's like birthing a child, right? Like,
it is. Yeah, it really is.
You have this child. I have my book, and now I have to put it out in the universe. Like, don't mm-hmm. judge it. Just buy it.
Right. Exactly. Yeah, it really is like that too. And even though, you know, I've got the story from somebody, I have to flesh it out a little bit. You know, it's interesting how many people have come to me and been like, oh, I've got a story for you that you'd love. And I'm like, okay. And they go, I saw a ghost once. Oh, that's awesome. Yeah. Let's see if we can stretch that out.
Give me the details.
I need to know all kinds of stuff. And so, yeah, it is definitely a labor of love. So for sure. So
have you had people that have read the book come up to you and say, I've had that same thing happen to me. Here's my account of it.
You know, I've had very interesting accounts like that. Yeah. I've had people come up to me and be like, oh, I read your book and, you know, I thought I was alone in having this experience. And one that just pops to mind that's kind of interesting is I interviewed a gentleman, and he gave me his UFO story. And in a nutshell, he saw a UFO. He was woken up in the mountains in the middle of the night and walked out, and there was a triangular UFO that was extracting water out of the stream by him in a blue light. It was humming when it did it. Then the hum and the light shut off. The water fell in, and then it took off. And I wrote that story up and was going to put it in my second book. And before I published that, I had somebody that came to me, and they're like, oh, I had a friend that had a UFO experience. You need to talk to him. So I hunted him down. And he had the exact same thing happen to him, only it was 80 miles away difference and 20 years different. But and the only the his story that he told me was exactly the same, except for the UFO in his story was a round circular UFO. And the first guy's was triangular. But other than that, it was like the exact same story. Yeah. Yep, and it definitely gave credibility to both stories because they didn't know each other. They didn't know it had happened. They never heard of anything like that before. So,
now, is there any maybe law enforcement that have given you stories from, you know, maybe some of their travels or being on the highway or in that area?
I haven't yet. No, they're actually kind of closed up too on their stories, yeah. oddly enough. In one of my stories, I had a gentleman who had a run-in with a Sasquatch, and he had during that time run into a officer, a highway patrolman. And even though I never could find and interview him, he had told this gentleman, you know, we're not really supposed to talk about the strange things that we see, but we definitely see strange things going on. So, so I know they're having them. It's just getting them to share them. I sure would love to meet a couple officers and get their stories because I know they're out there.
Yeah, definitely. Do you have a favorite story out of all three of your books?
You know, one of my favorites, I have a lot that are my favorite. I'll just share with you quickly. When he told me this story, and if I had just heard it and I out of the blue or whatever, I probably wouldn't even put it in because it was so strange. But as I was interviewing this guy, I could feel his fear. And so I really believe that he had run into this creature that he talked about. He was hiking in the mountains. He was in his early 20s. He was supposed to be with friends, but his friend had canceled and he decided to go on his own. When you're in your 20s, you're invincible, of course.
Right.
and he was camping and in the mountains, and it was during a burn ban, so he couldn't have a fire. So he'd just taken food, eaten it, laid out his bedroll. He always kept a book with him to read. So he had his headlamp, read for a little while, watched the stars, and went to bed. And in the middle of the night, he woke up, and he was a heavy sleeper, so he didn't know what had woke him up. And he was kind of confused, and he noticed it was really quiet. And he was trying to decide whether to go back to bed or not. And he got hit in the chest with a rock, not hard, but just tossed at him. And then something started whistling at him. And he said it wasn't a bird, and it almost sounded like somebody was calling to him. It was fairly close. So he slipped on his shoes because he's getting really nervous at this point. And he's trying to find his headlamp. And the whistling started again, and he finally realized his headlamp was still on his head. And so he flipped the headlight on and turned towards the sound, and sitting on this pile of rocks about 15 feet from him was this creature. And he explained it as green-gray in color. Its ears and nose and everything was really pointy, kind of skinny, had old worn clothes on. And when he's telling me this and explaining it, what's coming to my mind are the creatures in Harry Potter, the ones that run the bank, mm-hmm. the Gringotts.
Yeah.
And he said it was holding his hand over his eyes because he was shining the light right at it. And he was in shock because this was a creature he'd never heard of, never seen, whatever. He said if it was on its haunches. If it was standing up, it wouldn't even be quite 4 feet tall. And he's standing there staring at it. He's not sure how long. And he notices that it's moving something in its hand. And he looks and he realizes that this creature has his book in its hand. Oh, and he realizes that the creature was close enough to take the book from him. And it kind of snaps him out of it. And he just grabs his stuff and heads for the trail. He trips and his stuff goes spread. And as he's trying to gather his stuff up to run again, he can hear the whistling coming from behind him again.
Oh,
and it's getting closer. And he took off. And he said it was the most frightening thing in the world. He ran back to his vehicle. He just says that he doesn't even know how many miles it was, but he ran all the way back. But after he told me the story, and I could tell the fear in his voice, and even after several, many years of it happening, I got looking into it. And there's some creatures in Native American lore that fit that to a T. They're called the Pagwaji. And they're supposedly live in the mountains, cause trouble, try to lure people away. And the description is just like what he had explained to me. So I found that one just fascinating. I love that story.
I got goosebumps just listening to that one. Yeah, that's amazing.
The only thing that would have made that better is if he was carrying your book.
Yeah.
Okay. And saying, right, give if it me had an taken autograph. My book, right?
Yeah, can I have your autograph?
Oh, that would have been great.
That's amazing. John, if somebody wanted to get your book, how would they find it?
So they're all three on Amazon. There's paperback and Kindle versions on Amazon. And the first book is Stranger Bridgerland. The second is Beyond Stranger Bridgerland. And the one that's new just out this month or this last month is Stranger West. And like I said, they're all found on Amazon.
When do you feel that you'll be finished with your new book?
I'm in about a year. What I'm thinking. And yep.
So mark the date, everybody. This, 1 year from today. No.
1 year. Yeah.
He's guaranteeing. No.
Yeah.
Guaranteed strangeness, right?
What, yep. Before we let you go, what is, basically just a year, but what's the oldest story in your book? What year?
The oldest story that I have actually came from somebody who came to me who had a copy of his great-great-grandfather's journal. And so there were still two stories that came out of the journal, which I assumed was, you know, that to me, that's for if it comes out of your journal.
Yeah.
And they were of a UFO and some large fish at the lake that he had seen.
Oh.
So, and those were from the 1880s, roughly 1890s, something like that. So
a gamut of different years and that, you know, everybody can.
Yeah, they're spread out quite a bit. In this last book, I think the earliest one was a gentleman who told me a story from the 60s. So a lot of them are from the 80s and 90s and 2000s, but a lot of that has to do with just that I think that generation now feels more comfortable than some of the older generation in sharing their stories, I think.
And do you feel that the books cover pretty much everything from ghosts to Bigfoot to UFO, or do you think it's heavy on some ends, or like is it more ghosts?
I think
it's
pretty spread out through. I think it's pretty spread out through.
All right.
Well, John, do you have a website as well?
I do. It is at strangerbridgerland.com. Just one word, strangerbridgerland.com. And that has, my bio. It's got also how to contact, go through Amazon, get my books. It talks about some of my upcoming events that I may be having. When they come up, they'll be on there. And that's also the best way to contact me if anybody wants to contact me and tell me one of their stories. So,
and we'll definitely put this in the show notes also so people can go to the show notes and link you up with that. And hopefully, you know, if you're doing events, hopefully we'll hook up with you someday.
Yeah, you know, we travel all over, so it'd be great to meet you in person and get copies of all of your books.
So I can actually read it.
Yes.
Yeah, that would be awesome. I'd love to meet you guys. That would be great.
Well, John, we really appreciate you coming on the show and sharing your stories with our listeners. And for our listeners, go to John's website, go to Amazon, get copies of his books. I think you'll find that there are some really, really interesting stories here. And we appreciate you sharing it with us today.
Oh, thank you guys so much for having me on. I really appreciate it.
All right. Thank you. And we will talk to you later.
Bye.
Yeah, like I said, I was super intrigued by his stories.
Yeah, one of them gave me goosebumps. Yeah. I don't get that very often, but, you know, you can tell when something's a genuine and true story is when, you know, your body reacts to, you know, what somebody's telling you because we've been through it, right?
Yeah.
We've had experiences and we know that, you know, these things can't be taken lightly, right? Like, yeah, it's fun, though. I mean, ghost hunting is fun. But you also have to know that these were living humans and still holding on to locations or places because they that's where they were from. That's where their memories
and
were
like
made.
You said before the interview, about the depression, people held on to things in it. And in the case of like his house, like he mentioned in the interview, his relatives are still there. They're holding on to that house because that was their house. Either, you know, I mean, I don't know, they didn't build it, but that was their house.
Yeah. Yeah, I mean, your foundation, even, you know, it's funny because Joe and I have our own houses, right? And when I dream, I still dream I'm at mom and dad's house. Or I also dream that I'm at grandpa's house. So I'm wondering if you guys also have these kind of dreams, like you go back to, you know, where you felt safe as a child. Like that was your home base, right? Like to me, when I do dream and I dream that I'm at home, I'm either at grandpa's house or I'm at mom and dad's house.
Yeah, I dream about mom and dad's house also.
Yeah, which is interesting because I don't think I've ever had a dream where I was at my house.
I don't know. Now that I think about it, I don't think so. But I have in my dreams dreamt that I was at my other house, which I've never had another house.
I know, me too. And well, I mean, I can describe I've lived other places, but.
Yeah, no, but I can describe this house as my other house. And in my dreams, I never dream that I'm at my house. I always dream I'm at my other house. That's it's so bizarre.
Yeah.
We have got to have a dream show. We've talked
have to
about
because
it.
Like I have weird dreams about houses. So we're going to do a whole show just about dreams and houses and your dreams, right? But no, great. You know, go on Amazon, check out John's books. He has three of them. The fourth one, hopefully next year will be out. But, you know, just cherish people who love, you know, who are bringing these stories to you because you can listen to it. But, man, it takes a lot of perseverance to pull a book together and share it
and
with the world.
I don't know who said this, but I heard this on another podcast that audio and books are the most visual ways of storytelling.
Mm.
And people think, well, wait a minute. No, TV is. No, it's not. Because when you're listening to a story or reading a story, your mind is building that video in, you know, the video is being built in your mind.
Okay, yeah.
And I don't remember who said that, but it was one of the people from the 60s or 70s that had their own show.
Oh.
I can't remember. Oh. I can't remember yesterday. Let alone.
I know. I hear you, brother. I hear you. All right, everybody. I just had to add this in. I have to give a huge shout out to somebody. I told them on Facebook that I would give them a shout out. So Dalen Spratt from the Ghost Brothers, this is your shout out. And
we love you, brother.
Oh, shoot. It was somebody else.
Oh.
Okay, let me do it over.
Okay.
Okay, so I just had to add this in.
All right.
I've got to give a huge happy birthday shout out to somebody. Never met the person in my life.
Okay.
Only started following him about 6 months ago, maybe a year ago. I don't know if you guys are into this or not, but I want you to just keep an open mind. So go to YouTube and type in VLR, Vegas Low Roller, instead of High Rollers, Low Roller. His name is Danny. I like to call him Danny Boy.
That's the way, Danny Boy.
Oh, Danny Boy. The Bison Pipes are calling. Well, anyways, I want to give I told him I was going to give him a shout out on our show. And if you can watch his video, he's had this amazing journey. And I'm going to even call it a paranormal journey because it's not normal. But for 5 years, he recorded videos of himself playing slot machine. He was never on the videos, right? He went through a transformation after somebody had put his picture out there because he never wanted to be on camera. Okay. And that started a transformation where he started taking care of himself, going to the gym, having self-esteem, doing these amazing videos. Funniest thing, I'm telling you, it's so funny to watch him because he just has this banter. And I'll tell you a true story about this, and this is really cool. When I went to Vegas one time, Kendra and I had gone to Vegas, my best friend Kendra, and she was up in the room, and of course I was down gambling, right?
Of course.
Like, I love slot machines. And I heard this funny guy making these funny comments, and I never saw him, but I was laughing out loud because he was making these funny comments playing slot machine. And I could tell he was by himself, and I was like, all right, whatever, that's funny, like, cool. It was him.
Oh.
But I never saw him, and I never met him. So happy birthday, VLR, Daniel. Can't wait till your book comes out. It's going to be an amazing book about just, you know, inspiration, inspiring yourself, finding yourself, losing weight, being on a journey and completing the journey. So shout out to Vegas Low.
All right. All right. And with that, thanks everyone for listening this week. Get up on our website, tutuparanormal.com. All kinds of stuff up there. It tells you where we're going to be, tells you what we're doing. Few things for sale up there. Through Amazon links, of course. And just get up there. And if you like the show, please share it with a friend. I'm going to Mr. T you. Share the show, you foo.
Pay the foo, don't share the show. But anyways, take care, everybody. Joe, have a great week.
All right.
Be good, or I'm telling mom.
All right. See you, everybody.
Bye, everybody.